This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. One version of the huge financial bailout bill in Congress promises some help to homeowners. We'll have to see. But for thousands and thousands of people, any help will come too late. In many parts of the country, foreclosures are at record highs. According to RealtyTrack.com, 300 homes across the country just last month, up 12% from July and up nearly 30% from August 2007. If owning your own home represents the American dream, losing it can be a nightmare. But what actually happens? How far behind do you have to be before the sheriff shows up at your door with an eviction notice? Can you make a deal? Where do you go? What happens to your credit? What happens to your stuff? If the bank foreclosed on you, tell us what happened. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll get to the bailout bill a little later in the program when economist and journalist Sebastian Mallaby joins us on the opinion page. But first, foreclosure. John Taylor is with us here in Studio 3A. He's the president and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. And John, thanks very much for coming in today.
Glad to be here, Neil.
And walk us through the process. How does it start? What, do you get a notice from your bank?
Sure. One thing I want to be sure we clear up, though. You said 300 loans. It's actually 300,000.
That's what I said. I thought I said 300,000.
Yeah, 1,000 is important.
I apologize.
Only because there's, that's usually what it is in a year. We had that last month. Yeah, it's a lot of folks are getting notices now that they're in default, and usually that occurs after 90 days, and they're all wondering where to turn, who to turn to. Because normally what would happen is if you ran into a problem with your mortgage payment, you'd look around to refinance it, get a different term or condition, and, of course, that's really not available because of what's happened in the economy and their housing values have gone down. But there are options for people.
And, but typically what happens? You get that first notice from the bank, and how long does it take before it's final?
Well, unfortunately, this is it varies from state to state. And according to the various state laws that do exist, in some states, what would happen is that fairly immediately, particularly in states where they call them non-judicial, that is, it doesn't go through the court system, the process can be very fast. And then, depending on the lender, how motivated the lender is, today with property values down, a lot of lenders are really willing to negotiate, to work with you. And that's what the consumer ought to be doing, the homeowner ought to be doing, is that they ought to first, if they get a notice, really contact your lender and begin the process. But also contact a housing counselor so that you can know what your rights are and begin to see what the options are for you and your family.
It's not going to be a quick process, nor will it be easy.
Right. In either case, it's not quick or easy.
Well, let's see. We get a caller on the line, and 800-989-8255 if you'd like to tell us what happened when your bank foreclosed on you. Email us, talk@npr.org. Amy's with us on the line from Chicago, Illinois.
Hi. My dad is 58 years old, and he just lost his house. He ended up moving into a small apartment near where he lives. One of my concerns is that he can't repair his credit really in any time for retirement or any sort of security. And what had happened was he was partially laid off from his job because, ironically enough, he works in construction, manufacturing windows. So when the housing market goes down, then so
don't need so many windows. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened with him is he did try to work with his lender, actually, and they said they sent information out to him. And he never received it, so he called them back, and they said, oh, it went to the wrong state. So then they said, we'll send it right out. He never received it. And then he called them back, and they said, that deal no longer applies.
Right.
And
yeah.
3 days later, they were bought out by another company.
They were bought out by another company. Your dad eventually, did the sheriff knock on his door, or what did he have to?
He did indeed. I was actually on the phone with him talking about what his future plans could be, where his dog would go, things like that. And he had to get off the phone to get the knock on the door from the sheriff, which was very heartbreaking to hear. For somebody who's worked really hard his whole life, and the entire future just seems really uncertain now.
Yeah, I can understand that. Amy, thanks for the call, and we wish your dad the best of luck.
Thank you.
And the story that she told
is a common story, and it's, you know, it's repeated everywhere we go and through all the organizations we work with. It's the same thing. And sometimes it's not even that he lost his job. It's simply the kind of loan that they have.
One of those adjustable rate mortgages that suddenly explodes.
Exactly. And there's nowhere to turn because the property is no longer worth what the mortgage was. So there's no one wants to refinance it. So it's happening all across the country. As you mentioned, Neil, 300,000 mortgages. You know, as far as Amy's dad is concerned, most lenders, if you've gone into foreclosure, probably won't talk to you about another mortgage for another 2 years. But also, if, you know, as Amy pointed out, he made good faith efforts to get in touch with the lender, and they had made a mistake by sending the information to the wrong location, she can contact the credit bureaus, he can, and he can let them know this is what occurred. And they have the ability to see to it that the credit impairment that occurred from that foreclosure isn't as bad as it otherwise
might
be.
I've read that it's 200 points instantly off your credit rating.
I think it varies from there are three credit agencies and varies according to what actually occurs.
Well, joining us now from Soundscape Studios in Little Rock, Arkansas, is Paul Reyes. He's editor-at-large for the Oxford American and wrote a story in October's issue of Harper's Magazine, Bleak Houses Digging Through the Ruins of the Mortgage Crisis. Paul, thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
And you write about your dad's business in Florida, where you are a part-time worker. You sometimes go down and help out the crew, and you do what's called a trashing out of places that people have been foreclosed upon.
Right. By the time my father and the crew, and sometimes when I get there with them, the houses have been foreclosed upon, abandoned, the majority of them.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, one of the astonishing things you write about, obviously your dad's been in this business for quite some time. He's got a lot more work than he used to have, but it is through all sectors of the economy. It's very fancy houses, and it's crummy ones next to the interstate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, you know, I joined him in 98 was the first time I worked for him, and the majority of what we discovered in the homes, just through the material we would find, and I should say my background as a writer lent me toward seeing a lot of seeing these kind of character sketches or profiles coming together and what was left behind.
Literary forensics, you call it.
Yeah, literary forensics, exactly. And what we deduced was that the majority of foreclosures, at least the ones we came across, had to do with some kind of economic trauma, whether it was health-related or a divorce or something along those lines. And now, this time around, it's all over the map. I mean, it covers every demographic, every type of home. The range is much wider.
Yeah, you wrote also that it's hard to figure out which is creepier, the houses that end up getting completely trashed and full of stuff and the houses that are left meticulously neat.
Yeah, absolutely. Some houses, I guess there was a final dose of pride, homeowner pride, and they would pile up the television and the plants and the ferns and whatever magazines remained on the corner, or everything, you know, a lot of it, the Christmas ornaments and such would be set aside. And then, of course, the flip side of that were homes that were in such a state of disrepair that to me, they suggested a kind of a complete dishevelment, a kind of emotional and mental breakdown.
And those two, it doesn't matter which kind of how nice the house is on the outside, it can vary hugely on the inside.
Absolutely. It didn't really matter what neighborhood it was in. You just really didn't know what to expect.
One of the best lines in the piece is you go up to a house that your dad has to break into, and you tell him, you know, I'm surprised you haven't been shot.
It's true. And he says it's on his mind all the time. It's, again, when we show up at a house, we don't quite know whether or not it's occupied. And like I said, most of the time it's not. If it is, then we step out of the way, and my father, his wife is a real estate agent who deals in foreclosures, and so he'll just hand over her card, and then they can negotiate a cash for keys exit, because at that point the bank owns the house. They're not interested in negotiating. The trick at that point is to make it as relatively painless as possible. But yeah, so if the house is occupied, then then we step out of the way.
Yeah, cash or keys, $500 to help with the cost of moving if the house is left in reasonable condition.
Exactly, and sometimes that amount will vary. I know it's gone up to as much as $2,000, just depending on the circumstances.
Mm. Let's see if we get another caller in on the conversation. Let's go to Merrill, and Merrill's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to actually talk about something that actually my partner and I have been working on with one client for about a year. We own a real estate firm here in Charlotte. A lady had come to my partner actually last year. She had recently gotten behind on her mortgage, could no longer make her payments because she lost her job and was forced to take a lower paying one. She had been trying to contact her mortgage company almost immediately, doing a number of the things that you all talked to about trying to get her loan redone, really to no avail. So she came to us to try to help her sell her house, and we worked out the possibility of a short sale.
Selling it for less than what she actually owed.
Exactly. After about a month, we found what we thought was a good buyer for the property. We made the short sale offer, which took over 2 months for the mortgage company to actually approve. And most of that really had to do with the fact that we could never get anybody to call us back. We would send email after email, phone call after phone call, and it seemed that every time we got somebody, we'd be starting the process over from square one. Well, we finally get the short sale approved, and we get the letter back saying that everything was okay, this is what it's going to be, we have a sales contract. 2 weeks after we had the sales contract and the bank approved the terms of the short sale, the second mortgage on the property, this bank went and sold to another collection agency.
Wow.
Which ended up killing the entire deal. The buyer ended up walking away, and we're back to square one with this lady. We had started.
Merrill, I'm afraid we're up against the time, but thanks very much for the call. We'll get a response to your point after we get back from the break, okay? Thanks very much for the call, and we'll continue talking about foreclosure. 800-989-8255. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At the end of August, more than 6.5% of all mortgages were overdue. The number has climbed steadily for the past 3 years. We hear a lot about the facts on foreclosure, rates, and dollar amounts. Today, we're focusing on the people, what actually happens when the bank forecloses on you. If it happened to you, tell us your story. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guests are John Taylor, President and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, and Paul Reyes, who wrote an article called Bleak Houses Digging Through the Ruins of the Mortgage Crisis in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. And John Taylor, that story we're hearing from Merrill just before the break, the difficulty of dealing with banks and mortgage companies at this point, the entire industry must be so panicked.
It's in chaos.
That these models of efficiency, not returning somebody's email, sounds like a more and more likely proposition.
Yeah, and in normal times, that is a healthy real estate market. You'd have a number of lenders who'd be interested in doing the refinancing or providing the mortgage. I think, at least for consumers, when they're in a situation where they're in a short sale, what they really need to be sure is that they're engaged with the housing counseling agency, not only because they can tell them what their rights are and what their options are, but also they have relationships with a number of financial institutions who are prepared to deal with those kind of situations, who are working with the community groups, the nonprofits, and the homeowners to find ways to refinance and restructure loans and to be able to make a difference in a situation like Merrill described.
Yeah, and Paul Reyes, I wanted to ask you, short sales, obviously, again, selling the house for less than you paid for it or less than you owe on it. And that's a situation in the housing market in Florida you guys ran into all the time.
Sure. It didn't make it into this particular article, but I did talk to foreclosure mitigation specialists, and what I discovered is that, the resources are out there, but the amount of effort and energy, psychological, emotional, physical, and otherwise, that is required to negotiate that short sale or a foreclosure, is in itself a full-time job, and a lot of these people simply just don't have the means or the resources to dedicate themselves fully to that. So they're at the mercy of paperwork and bills and all kinds of notices coming in the mail, and so it really is overwhelming.
Paul, did you run into any that were dealing with housing counseling agencies? Because there are a lot of them now.
I did not.
Because that can mitigate some of what you're talking about. I agree with what you just said.
Yeah, I did not. The problem is I think for some reason, and even though there's plenty of advertising out there now, let's say in the paper, what I found when I was there in March, there's just thousands, and I think that the county has cleaned this up, but there were thousands of just handwritten signs stuck on medians and
right.
Yeah. The side
and,
of the road.
And those are the signs they don't want to pay attention to. Honestly.
Right. And you know, there are a lot of it was amazing how many traps for every solution that's out there. There are two or three traps set.
Mm-hmm.
No one I talked to really had any experience in dealing with the folks who could help them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just a matter of those people just getting in touch with each other. And I'm not quite sure how they do that in a way that's efficient or in a way that is timely enough to save the home. And I guess that's the next step is to try to bridge that gap.
Here's an email we got from Rick in Grand Junction, Colorado. We foolishly purchased a home beyond our means in 2003 with an adjustable rate mortgage. I also foolishly continued working for a floundering company. Between bounced paychecks and the skyrocketing interest rates, we got more than 90 days behind twice. The first time we were able to come up with $5,000 to get us caught up, but that didn't touch the lawyer's fees, which were also over $6,000. The mortgage company agreed to spread that over 12 months and tack it on to our monthly mortgage payment. Needless to say, adding $600 per month on top of the mortgage we already couldn't afford did not solve our problem. We received notice that the foreclosure would be complete May 15th. We packed up and moved out and are still trying to pick up the pieces. Because of my stupidity, my wife and children must suffer the consequences of not having a secure place to live. If you're new to getting a mortgage, do your homework and don't believe anything anyone says at face value. Be a bulldog and look before you leap. All good advice.
So, yeah, there's good advice. I think he's beating up on himself a little unfairly, because what changed for he and millions of Americans is that, you know, not the desire to own a home. They all do, and they all want to get into the biggest home and as quickly as possible. That's always been a natural American characteristic. What's different is the willingness of the lender to make you a loan when they knew that you'd be in trouble down the road, and unless your property value continued to grow or your income grew all of a sudden, you're going to be in trouble. So he fell into a trap that a lot of people fell into, and hindsight's always 20/20. Don't beat yourself up so badly, because it's very much as well the industry, which in the past would have said no to a person like that, was very willing because of the fees they'd collected to help him. Again, he could have used a housing counseling agency. He shouldn't have paid those kind of legal fees. There are sites you can go to, and I can give just a couple if that's helpful to listeners.
What we'll do is if you give them to us, we'll post them on our website, our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation.
Yeah.
They'll be up a couple hours after
Great.
The show.
Great.
All right, let's get another caller on the line. This is Wayne, and Wayne's with us from Anchorage in Alaska.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
My foreclosure happened back in the mid-'80s in that housing bust there. And people are in for a nasty surprise if the laws are still the same. A non-judicial foreclosure is viewed by the IRS for the amount of money that they did not collect from you, the bank that you still owed, is considered a gain on your part.
Really?
Is taxable. So we wound up losing a $160,000 house, and on top of that, we were given a $12,000 tax bill for losing it.
Is that the way the law worked, John Taylor? Does it still work that way?
I can't answer that question. It's a surprise to me.
So you've never heard of it?
No.
It was a real surprise for us, too.
And this is back in the 80s? Yeah.
Yes, back in 86 or so. Up here in Alaska, we got it.
Did you get did you finally get out from underneath?
We paid it off eventually.
Well, congratulations. And were you able ever to get another mortgage?
Oh, yes. The laws that we used to hear about were that it goes off your credit record in 7 years. Well, you kind of have to fight that because you're still hearing about it 9, 10 years later when you apply for things. It's good to write up a paper that explains the whole foreclosure process and what you went through so that you can hand it out to the businesses that you're trying to apply for credit for after 7 years is up and it's still on your record.
Thanks for the call, Wayne. We're glad you got out.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Roberta. Roberta's with us from Sacramento.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I was a tenant, and I rented a small house in the Santa Rosa, California area that the landlords had owned for about 10 years, but they used it to borrow again to get another home that they lived in. And then I was a tenant for 2.5 years. I was in Minnesota on vacation when the guy watering my plants called and said, there's a big notice posted on your house that it's been foreclosed on and it's going to be sold on Thursday. So I flew back early, luckily had friends in Sacramento who said, we have an empty duplex, come and move your stuff and relax, you know, catch up. And then I got laid off the next week from my job, so I'm now, I think there's a big bunch of us tenant people who are also paying the price for what's going on right now, because I didn't think I had any recourse, so of course I left. But what I'm wondering is, what's going on with the house these people own? If this house got foreclosed on is there other loan? They get to keep their house and displaced tenants, I guess, is what I'm asking.
John, can you help us out?
Sure. I mean, and this is a common problem, and unfortunately, this is regulated by state law. You have a situation where the tenants actually have nothing to do with the fact that the mortgage wasn't paid. They're paying their rent on time, but the landlord is for whatever reason is falling behind on their mortgage, and they're the ones who suffer the consequences. There are many states now that have been passing laws that actually protect the tenants, and it sounds like it's too late for her, but I'm sure that California, places like Massachusetts, elsewhere have laws that protect the tenants from being able to be evicted. And so what people ought to do if they're tenants and they think they might be in jeopardy of being evicted, not because they're not paying rent, but because their property is being foreclosed on, is that they should contact their local housing counseling agencies, local government, and find out what their particular state has.
Well, I had a clue that this was going on. I mean, mm-hmm. It's absolutely, you know, my rent, of course, right. Paid each month, and then
sure.
I had no idea that mm-hmm. this was happening. But do they just keep their home that they live in then? If they use this property as a, you know, to borrow money for their home, they're safe in their home. They just let them.
I guess it depends on how they arrange right. the loan, and we can't know that.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, I just think there's a lot of people out there who can't afford, never took the risk, whatever, to own, you know, work in that $35,000 to $50,000 a year mm-hmm. range, and I am a single woman, you know, that we're being displaced, too, by these people who went in over their heads.
So. Yeah, collateral damage, I guess.
That's right.
Enjoy your show always. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, Roberta. Appreciate it. And Paul Reyes, I wanted to get back to you. There was a list that you drew up that's in your article of the stuff that you found in the house of a woman that had been owned by a woman named Sue, she's now owned by the bank. One wicker throne, one walkie-talkie, the White Album, master plots, 6 volumes, 15 pairs of women's shoes, Mother's Day card signed, Love Us, glasses, one pair, and you glean from a pile of bills that she'd inherited money from a will, spent it, was collecting Social Security by the time she lost the house, had lived in Maine for a while, and scribbled epigrams and lyrics on index cards and coupons. You learn a lot about the lives of these people when you go through the stuff they leave behind.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, before that morning, we were on the way to that address, and I mentioned to my father, I said, you know, it's strange that I haven't, in all the houses that we've trashed out, I haven't found, I haven't discovered a reader, someone who's just, you know, devoted to books. And oddly enough, we stumble upon this house, and there was just a ton of books everywhere. And you know, I couldn't quite tell. It's funny, in that particular house, I wasn't quite sure. Who was the reader, whether it was Sue or her late husband. And in fact, I deduced that she had a late husband because in the in a shed in the back were another set of books and yearbooks, as if all of the possessions of this former husband had stashed away, which the humidity in Florida had, you know, been eating at all that material for a long time, because it was destroyed.
Yeah, you were, the millipedes crawling out of the John Jakes books. Yeah,
absolutely. But you do. I mean, and it's you do learn a lot from what's left behind, and sometimes you can, you know, if again the neighbors come around and they kind of act as a Greek chorus in all this, because they tend to get a little curious and wonder what you're doing there, and whatever pieces are missing to the puzzle, they tend to fill you in on it and let you know whether I was off track or not. In terms of putting this character sketch together.
Yeah, do you feel a little like the reporters going around to the house of the suddenly discovered serial killer? He was such a quiet man.
Right.
We're talking with Paul Reyes, editor-at-large for the Oxford American, about his article, Bleak Houses, Digging Through the Ruins of the Mortgage Crisis. Also with us, John Taylor, president and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Richard on the line. Richard calling us from Las Vegas, Nevada, which may be the foreclosure capital of America.
I would have to agree with you.
What's up, Richard?
Well, I was involved in a car accident in early January, and my wife and I realized that by losing my income, we would only barely squeak by. And with pending medical bills coming up and still coming in, we chose to foreclose. We had to, really. It was just a matter of $20 a month more than we were making. And the lenders we found weren't really willing to work with us at all.
Really?
They said, oh, yeah. It was one of those things where we told them the situation. They said, sure, we'll work with you, but you're going to be late. So it amounted to about $5,500 in surcharges and whatnot. They did that breaking up over a 4 or 5 month period of the payments. And we said, isn't this some sort of a special circumstance? And they couldn't agree with us. They said, sure, we'll work with you, but sorry. We got help by renting an in-law's house. And they thought, well, you know, we need a bigger house. We're growing family. So they went out looking, thinking that a short sale or something like that would be easy to find. And they've tried 3 times in the last 3 months to get a short sale house. And the lender keeps shutting off the negotiations right at the last minute, raising the price.
Because credit's so tight. How are you doing now, Richard?
I'm still doing it. I can't work as well as I'd like to. Everything's still kind of falling apart. Thank you for asking. But it's just a matter of, it's very difficult for any situation, I think. Because, as I said, my in-laws thought it would be an okey-doke to go out and get another house.
Yeah,
they have the means, they have the credit score, everything, and the lenders keep raising the prices at the last minute.
Because the market is so volatile and money is so tight. Thanks very much for the call, Richard. And Paul Reyes, in your article, you describe people who, as soon as this starts, just mail the keys to the bank.
Oh, yeah, the jingle mail, I think, is what they call it. But they'll just give up, you know. And that's a fascinating point that he brings up, because I found in March, again, talking with these foreclosure mitigation specialists, that what they were telling me is that, and John, you would know better than I would on this, but the banks simply didn't have a rule book for this. They didn't have a department that was set up, or the lenders either didn't have a department that was set up to deal with this kind of situation. It goes from agents who are telling you that you're late on your payment to agents whose responsibility it is to get the house and then put it back on the market. There's nothing in between. And they were scrambling as much. And again, a year from now, I think their policies will be different. It sounded to me as if the policies at the lenders and at the banks was changing month by month.
Yeah. And it really depends on the type of lender, because the market is in such chaos. The flexibility of different lenders to be able to be responsive varies greatly depending on the size of the lender, the location of the lender. But again, folks like Richard, who just called, would really be better off trying to have a housing agency work on their behalf. And most of them are free. I mean, and they're there to help people, to help them avoid foreclosure. But they know how to make the arguments. They know how to put the pressure on. They know what the latitude of the lender is or isn't. They know who to go to who's more likely to say yes. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people don't reach out to those kinds of agencies. But fortunately, there are a lot of them, and they're all over the country. And we're going to post that on the NPR website so you can find it.
John Taylor, president and CEO of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. And again, go to our website at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll get those website posted for you. We'd also like to thank Paul Reyes, editor-at-large for Oxford American, who wrote Bleak Houses, Digging Through the Ruins of the Mortgage Crisis in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, if the government's going to spend $700 billion taxpayer dollars, your money, what should we get for it? That'll be next on the opinion page, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to get in on that conversation, or email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.